The following podcast is brought to you by the Village Zendo. For more information, visit villagezendo.org.
Good evening, everyone. It's, even though I was a little bit dreading this, it's good to be here with everyone this evening. I can't believe who's in front of my eyes. There's a number of people I haven't seen in a while, and it's great to see you. But this one, I don't think I've seen in, 15, 20 years, like some really crazy number. And it's so, I was just like pointing to Shinryu, is that him? Is that really Jokai? And it's like, here he is. Anyway, it's always a little daunting to try to say anything after that opening chant, you know? It's just like, oh my God, incomparably profound, infinitely subtle, you know? But it's just all about trying to get us to pay attention to everything and nothing, you know, to just give it all our equal attention and appreciation and to try to not miss it. So we have all of this stuff to get us to pay attention. To a cup, or a clock, or dust on the cushion, whatever it is. I'm sorry, I can tell every months have passed because I can see less and less. So I have to hold this because it's just a blur down there. But, you know, this is nothing new for the past couple of years, but I don't know, there's been something I would say particularly tempestuous, really, about the last couple of weeks. I think, you know, it's really just been like an emotional roller coaster, even more than usual. I think, you know, on a personal level, like probably almost every woman I know, it's been a mix of the usual social, political trauma. But I think it's kind of been also very mixed with revisiting early personal sexual trauma, you know, of varying degrees and levels. For some reason, though this has been probably the case, as we're seeing for like maybe the last 10,000 years, I don't think it's new to right now, but there seems to be a consciousness about it. You know, yeah, the Me Too movement and that, I don't know, just something pierced differently with this scenario and just what's going on with the guys on the Supreme Court. That's been particularly disturbing, opening many things. I would just have to say that, you know, practice and Zazen in particular has been really, more than anything, what's provided the kind of shelter in the storm, if you will. You know, because as much as I believe, and I do believe strongly in the value and the importance of understanding and discussing and taking action in regard to everything, really, but especially what's coming up right now, I think the need for the balancing power of meditation has really never been more profoundly helpful. Without it, you know, speaking for myself, I would just be in an unending state of ranting and raving and near hysteria and, you know, anxiety and despair, and probably all I could ever see is like the end is coming, you know. And I think just really unable to function in a way and be in my life in a way where I could find any times of joy, peace, or a sense of possibility. So I don't think I'm probably just speaking for myself. It would seem like a person would have to be brain dead to not be experiencing and feeling these things right now. But our practice and our meditation in particular reminds us that that's not all there is. Yeah. There's just so much going on in terms of information, things to do, things to think about, things to take care of. It's kind of like being in the midst of really hurricanes, you know, in the mind. Today it's Hurricane Alice, and the day before that it was Hurricane Florence, and so, you know, there's just this sense on a certain level of which way is the wind gonna blow next. But our practice, you know, I've been, I guess, really profoundly grateful for realizing the ways in which it can allow the winds to subside, to quiet, and actually for some moments to even stop completely. And in this quiet space, in the midst of all that is still happening, and it's not like there's a lack of awareness that all of this is in fact still happening, we can still make contact and connect to the beauty of a bird calling. If we're up on the 11th floor, to that hypnotic whoosh of cars coming and going, to the rumbling of the trucks, maybe a touch of breeze or a touch of sweat. shimmer of light from the fan. Just the softness of the way the cloth moves from the breeze, from the fan. And maybe more deeply, the calming waves of our own breath rolling in and rolling out. The slightest shift in the spine connecting us to the sky or to the ground beneath us. You know, it's as if it's magic, you know? The mystery that just minutes before was completely invisible becomes all of a sudden everywhere, all around us. Holding us, actually, inside and out. The certainties of the imminent end of the world on a larger scale, or perhaps it's our personal demons berating us again and again over whatever. Both just begin to soften, feel more open and spacious, and that tight grip that's closing our throats and squeezing the mind actually does loosen. You know, it just never ceases to amaze me that when I get up from Zazen, I am really never the same as when I sat down. And, you know, without even trying, one just notices more when we first get up. You know, we notice the feel of the wood on the floor. When we walk, might be the colors around us. Just whatever it is, you know, it's kind of like suddenly everything can become interesting, of value. And it's like we don't already know what everything is. We just experience it, starting with ourselves. And it's amazing how this seemingly very simple thing changes everything. Even if we're having the most painful sit in the world and all we can think about is when is the Jikido ever going to ring that bell, you know, it's like when we stand up, that feeling can be, oh my God, I can move, the sweetest release and relief in the world. And still, things are not the same. So our practice then asks us to bring this quality of openness, of following along so closely the way we do with our breath to whatever it is we're doing and to whomever it is we happen to be with, to just wherever we are, pay open, close attention. And we just roll up our sleeves and take it with us into wherever we go and whatever we're doing. This is our practice. But of course, we forget, and we do forget. And so that's one of the reasons we come to places like this, to help us remember how important it is to do these things, because the importance and the value can get lost when we're at home and when we're at work and when we're wherever we are, and we just have to check that email once again or make that phone call or take care of this or clean that or run to the store and get, you know, there's always something that's more important. And here, it's this grand opera around sitting and doing nothing but being quiet and playing close, close, close attention. And the more we do this here, you know, the more it helps us to develop our practice in the midst of the phone calls and the emails and the meetings and, you know, the infinite whatever it is, and it is infinite. To just come back to right here, right now. To come back from our absorption with what happened before, from what isn't happening now but should be happening now, from what we think will be happening imminently, but to just simply fully be where we are, inside and out. And it doesn't have to be that different from all of a sudden, if we notice we're counting the breath and all of a sudden, how did I get here? I'm on 15 and I was gonna return at 10, you know, or we notice the breath, what breath, you know? So what do? We just come back. We return to what we're doing, who we're with, and where we are. Fully. And with our close attention, we see that actually the universe, the whole universe, is everywhere. And so in this way, we can, in fact, experience moments of beauty and joy, even in the midst of the tempestuous storms that are raging all around us. As we just walk in the rain. Oh, do we do this? You know, I was thinking we would, should we do that first and then quit? No, okay. So We've been hearing that, like, a lot of people have been wanting to just, you know, have some time to either have questions or have thoughts that they want to share. So we just thought, I just thought I'd leave time in case anybody had any questions or would like to share anything. Please feel free. Kondo.
Thank you, Sensei. I guess referring back to religious, how do I, I had trouble listening to both lines of testimony. A lot of trouble. And when I heard Brett Kavanaugh, I heard a man who, I didn't hear a man who felt he was wrongly accused. I heard a man who was qualified and who, excuse me, I felt he sounded like an untreated alcoholic. I guess what I've been trying to deal with is how do I feel compassion for someone who I don't need and who I don't want in there? And, well,
you know, that's, I think that's an excellent question for all of us. But I think that actually, you know, we are so used to thinking we have to feel one way, that if we feel compassion for him for these things, that means that it's okay what's happening, and, well, he should just get some help and he'd still be a fine candidate to be on the Supreme Court. You know, so to have compassion for him does not mean that. I mean, and we can actually be furious and have rage and actually still find space for some compassion and to hope and pray that he, and not just we could extend it, but, well, we do extend it, to that they all can open their minds and their hearts and, be, you know, whatever. And we can also, trying really hard to be diplomatic, you know, I was one of those people, I was screaming, stomping around the studio, screaming at the computer screen where Paul had the hearings on my birthday. It was like, what is he saying? But we can feel that way. We can have compassion and we can still think it's absolutely wrong what they're doing and want to take action to try to see that that doesn't happen and feel despair and possibility. You know, there is, in fact, room for all of it. And, you know, I think part of our practice is to not just get stuck in one, to not just get stuck in the rage, and then to not just get stuck in, well, I doubt that's a problem in this room, compassion for his situation at the moment. But I think we need to make room for all of it and to try to see it from as many different sides as possible. And that's challenging. concert. You know, I mean, I believe the time is now, and I think if people had the way to respond that would be effective and skillful, or effective, and God willing, it's skillfully effective, because otherwise you don't want to just become the other side. The same thing with a different whatever, but yeah, I mean, the time is now, but you know, I think more, at least half the country is, you know, in this same space of what do we do? I mean, knowing something has to happen, and it, you know, what is it going to be? Or do things get so bad that there's a revolution? I mean, who knows, you know, where this is heading? It's completely what feels to me, and I am not a political expert, you know, by any stretch of the imagination, but it seems very different than anything we've seen, I've seen in my lifetime. And so... The one thing that I will say that gives me hope is the knowledge that so many people in this country and all over the world are grappling with the same question in the same way and thinking about things more deeply and more openly and than probably ever before. And that something will come of this, you know. That turns this destructive thing that's happening and can turn it, you know. If I had the answer of what to do, I'd be running for president. But, you know, I have to believe that things will shift, and hopefully it will be before they get so catastrophically bad. Jokai.
I just wanted to share something that has helped me with some of this.
Great.
I have a friend who practices in the Vajrayana tradition, which is a Sambhar tradition. And in the Vajrayana tradition, they envision a lot of different deities. And they're not necessarily, I mean, some of them would be symbolic or mythological, they aren't necessarily considered to be real, but the panoply of them embraces what is contained within the Buddhist vision of what's possible. And some of those deities are wrathful, and they are honored for being wrathful.
Yeah.
And it comes down to what the intention is. In the Vajrayana tradition, and that's really helped me. And one other thing I wanted to just share, I sit with a Thich Nhat Hanh group now, and I hear a lot of things that Thich Nhat Hanh has said. And there was a group in the Midwest somewhere where he was doing a workshop. And one of the people who was attending the workshop was a police officer, a woman police officer who carried a gun. And she raised the question of feeling conflicted about her role carrying this gun on the one hand and being a Buddhist and all that we hold dear on the other. And Thich Nhat Hanh paused and he looked at her and he said, you know, there's nobody I'd rather have than you carrying a gun.
Yeah.
And that really touched me.
Yeah. You know, I completely agree. I think if you weren't feeling any rage right now, it's like, well, go sit on a rock in Tibet and be happy, namaste. I mean, like, you know, but, you know, how do we channel that energy in a way that it's going to be a work, you know? I mean, that's, but, you know, and that's why I think we need the panoply, as you were saying, of all these different energies and how do they come together. Towards beneficial action, which can also include anger. And usually always has, because how could it not, really? But that's a great image of the policewoman with the gun. That's, you know. Yeah.
Feeling for a long time that this rage, as you mentioned, that the opera and that's with it. There's an you mentioned the word opera. Is opera sort of surrounding the meditation, zendo, and the opera within going on that we're trying to observe. And for me, the opera within has entailed a lot of anger, and way before this, I mean the climate catastrophe going on is being engineered from on high, you know, for a long time, and a zillion, I mean, the Yemen policy killing, I mean, they have this proportion here. You're talking about the Supreme Court nominee versus, you know, tens of thousands of Yemenese people being bombed by our missiles. So if you have this kind of larger context for the internal opera, but the internal opera, if I'm phrasing it, perhaps it's helpful to help take a step back and say this is going on, all kinds of things going on.
Oh yeah.
Caught up in everything.
I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I mean, you know, this Supreme Court is the two. I mean, it's basically anywhere in the world you look now, and any subject that you turn to at the moment is, you know, it's really unbelievable what's happening right now. So that's why I think it's imperative really to try to find that space within to be in the midst of this in a way where we can also live our lives with some degree of peace and love and joy, even in the midst of all the terrible things going on. And, you know, we might all die tomorrow. We might all die in 3 hours, you know. So what's the quality of how we're interacting with each other and with ourselves right now, you know? You know, don't miss the opportunity to experience some of those things because we're constantly in a state of rage or despair. you know. I mean, rage and despair actually have their place. But I think there's a better possibility for using them and not being consumed and eaten alive by them. With our practice. That's been my own personal, you know, experience. Which, again, is not to say that it's not a challenge, no. But the challenge is the practice. You know, if it was easy, we wouldn't need to be here doing this. You know? And if there wasn't suffering, Buddhism wouldn't exist. There'd be no need, really.
My name is Seizan, and one of the things that I don't hear talked about very much, but it's very much in our work, in some of the koans that we study and in some of the texts that we study, and that is that, you know, this particular branch of Buddhism has lasted through political upheavals and wars, and all of that's gone on for thousands of years, and it's still alive. The practice, the sila, the practice of meditation and coming back to the cushion has been kind of protected. People continue to come back to it. And just when I think about it, not just in the history of this moment and what that's doing to me here, but when I look at the history of what the practice of meditation has done and how it has lasted through other political times that were much more barbaric than perhaps what we're going through now, even though this seems pretty barbaric. I return to the cushion because there is a kind of equanimity that it gives me to be able to go on. Even though I'm angry, even though I'm very upset with what's happening and feel, you know, to a good deal kind of helpless about what I can do about it. But for myself, I know that one thing I can do is I can practice. I can continue this practice, and I can encourage this practice in other people so that they'll be able to live with a little more equanimity in their life and a little more balance, particularly when it seems this crazy or this out of control. It's kind of like saying, this is not the first time that Zen has been confronted with problems, or that the people who practice this have been confronted with problems. And yet, this practice goes on. And it goes on the way it's going on for a long time, much longer than I can imagine in my head. So, yeah. You know, I'll come back here for this, because it has lasted through political upheavals and through barbaric wars. And for me, it will continue. And it will go on.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think since there's been civilization and humanity, there's been incredible violence, barbarism, war, trauma of all sorts, and spiritual practice has been there at the beginning and it's here now. So, you know, whatever path leads one to find that quality of equanimity and an awareness of the oneness of all of us, you know, whatever path it is that works for you, this is a very good time to be walking on it, you know. For the people in this room, you know, it seems to be Zen, but whatever it is, you know, this is our form of practice, but there's many. But the thing is to practice.